joining us.
I want to thank Rabbi Brenner for inviting me, as always, for participating in our Amiel Bakehila programming. We should note that today is Memorial Day here in America, and so we're learning Torah together. So let us learn in memory of those who gave their lives on behalf of the United States of America, that give us the freedom to sit here in this shul, this wonderful shul, and practice our religion and our freedom. Not just the Jewish soldiers who gave their lives, so many of them, and the ones who served with distinction, but all of the soldiers who fought for the freedoms that we hold dear. I think that's something that's very worthwhile for us to remember. And it's more and more there. The neshama should have an aliyah, and that should be our focus as well. In addition, I would mention that I don't know if you heard, there were wildfires in Israel last week, mm-hmm. And the yeshuv of Mavo Modi'in was burned to the ground, literally burned to the ground. So all of you who follow, first of all, thank God no one was hurt. Absolutely, everyone got out alive. So the reason this is in my mind is because 200 of those, like 200 of the families or 200 of the people, they were evacuated to our moatza, to our regional council. And so my wife is very, very involved. Like, they sent out who can come and help and volunteer. And so my wife, I've just been talking with her about the idea, like, try to imagine for ourselves, like, thank God no one is hurt, but your house burned down, you have nothing. So the communities are really, really generous. They're not, you know, people, they're going to need help, obviously. But the community just brought everything, like, you know, Q-tips and toothpaste. But the idea of the trauma, of trying to deal with the trauma of losing your house, of losing your home, we should just have them in mind. I think sometimes the idea of imo anochi b'tzara, I am with you in pain, that's a Jewish value as well. To understand that there's a Jewish community that, thank God, is well and healthy, but has a lot of work to do in order to rebuild their homes. That's something that, like in Houston, they had the floods. In Mobile Modi'in, thank God nobody died.
But were these due to Maserat, or were they due to...
They thought originally electrical shorts. Now they're thinking it might be arson. There might be arson, yeah. What happens is, it becomes sort of when there are these... Like in Israel, it's very tense, always very tense, because, you know, there's fire bombings. There are the balloon fires that happen all the time that you just don't hear about anymore because they're so commonplace that nobody bothers to talk about them. And then there are these copycats. So when there's a wildfire, okay, now there's a wildfire. So then people take it as an opportunity to go start fires also. And it's not just non-Jews. They caught a soldier, they caught a Jew also trying to start a wildfire in a Palestinian field. Lo aleinu, it's a terrible thing. So these things, like, they become copycat things as well. So we have to just keep it in mind. Okay, the topic of this year is called Monty Python. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and Rav Kook meet in a cave on Lag BaOmer. And the reason I want to start this is, obviously, we just celebrated Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day of the Omer. And Lag BaOmer has somehow become associated with Hilula de Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Right? Does anybody know how it became associated with Hilula Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? Like, we know that the sages tell us that's the day that Rabbi Akiva's students stopped perishing. Or there was the great plague. It subsided at least for a day. That's the tradition. Does anybody know how it became associated with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, with his death? Anyone know? Rabbi, do you know? I honestly don't know.
The Zohar in the 15th century.
Right. The 15th century work of the Zohar is associated, it's attributed the authorship.
No, at the same time, Rav Chaim Vital said that Lag BaOmer was his
yahrzeit. Rav Chaim Vital said that it was his yahrzeit. Okay.
The earliest written source is...
Rabbi Brander is alluding to is the earliest source for the yahrzeit of a man who died in the first century, you know, is 15th century. So, like, Judaism likes to do that. It likes
to... It's the Sabbatean text.
What?
It's the Chemdes Yamim, which is the Sabbatean text.
Really?
Yeah.
Who has made that association? Don't tell all the 600,000 Haredim that were in Meiron on...
anyone at the same place where we get Jewish Ratzeder from.
Right, 100%. I actually believe, like, that Jewish customs like this evolve. It doesn't mean that it's wrong. It doesn't mean that it's historically correct. It means that this is how we observe. This is our way of observance. And if 500,000 Jews want to do a bonfire in Meiron, and that's their religious expression, so that becomes part of the Jewish tradition. That really, you know, the Jewish tradition adapts and you know, especially if it's not anti-halachic, You know, what is anti-halachic is all of our children in Israel, I don't know, do they make bonfires here in Hartford? Do they probably do like a little one, you know, small ones. So in Israel, it's literally like it's like the apocalypse, because the kids spend literally the month before stealing wood from every construction site they can find. They gather them up, create these small fires, and of course you can't have one fire. Every little group has to have their own fires. So you go around the yishuvim or the towns, and there are all these fires, and that might have contributed to the fire. It is extremely dangerous. Extremely dangerous. And they announced before this Lag BaOmer, it's very dry, very hot, and you could only light fires in specifically designated areas. And what happened happened. Okay, so we'll go back to the time Rabbi Shimon Bar-Chai. This reminded me of what's the connection to Monty Python. So there's a very famous skit in the life of Brian. Okay, if you haven't seen it, it's worthwhile. Just nowadays, you don't have to watch the whole movie, but you can watch it. It's the very famous scene of what have the Romans done for us? You know, there's this up in the movie. The movie's about this terrorist group, the Judean People's Liberation Front, or the People's Liberation Front for Judea. It's one of these things. It's kind of a play on the different Palestinian factions. And they're talking about rebelling against the Romans. So he says, what have the Romans done for us? And of course, the implication is the Romans have done nothing for us. And so one of them pipes up and says, well, there's the aqueduct. And he says, oh, yeah, they gave us that. That's true. And then another one says, well, and the sanitation. Ah, the sanitation. You remember what the city used to be like. Okay, I'll grant you the aqueduct. And the sanitation, the leader, are the two things that the Romans have done for us. And then another guy pipes up, and the roads, well, obviously the roads go without saying, but apart from the roads and the aqueducts and the sanitation, and then another one says irrigation, medicine, education, health, like the whole idea is this guy's trying to say the Romans have done nothing for us, and all the terrorists who are actually part of the terrorist group are saying like, like noting all of these things, you know, it's funnier in the watching than in the telling, but it's a very... have you all seen it? Yes? Okay. But many people don't realize, I don't know if it's borrowed from, but there's an incredible parallel between this skit and a famous Agadic piece in the Talmud, if you turn to the next page. Okay, one of the famous story about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai entering into the cave. It starts with a discussion of what have the Romans done for us? Literally, what have the Romans done for us? Okay? Because, so I'll preface it by asking, okay, were the Romans by definition, anti-Judaism or anti-Jews? Before they destroyed the temple, were the Romans anti-Judaism? Dr. Kermides?
No,
there were segments.
What?
There were segments.
As a policy.
I don't think so.
Right. Why not? What do the Romans want?
I think they wanted power, and they allowed people to do what they wanted in terms of religion.
Right.
As long as they're happy and they pay tax.
Correct. Right. The Romans wanted power. Right. When the Romans conquered an area, the Romans would come into the area, right, take over and say, okay, it's like a win-win. We want you to be part of the Roman Empire. You pay us taxes. The Roman Empire is bigger. Everyone is stronger, and everyone's happy. Only later, significantly later, did the idea of repressing Judaism become an issue, and we'll talk about why. I think this Gemara, this text, is going to tell us why. Okay, we're gonna start at the first line. The Yatvi Rabbi Yehuda. The Talmud is in the middle of telling a story, and there's translation on the side so you can follow as well. Yatvi Rabbi Yehuda, v'Rabbi Yosei, v'Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, these are Tanaim, sages from the time of the Mishnah. We're talking about before the destruction of the temple. V'yativ Yehuda ben Geirim Gabayu. Yehuda, there's a man named Yehuda ben Geirim who is sitting by them. Patach Rabbi Yehuda ve'amar. So Rabbi Yehuda, this is a Jewish sage. He opened up the discussion and he said, Kama na'im ma'asehem shel umazu. How wondrous are the actions of this nation? Meaning of the Romans. The Romans are great. Tiknu shvakim, tiknu ksharim, tiknu marchetzaot. Right? Look at all the amazing things that they brought into our society. They brought markets. They built bridges. They built bathhouses. You know, let's be honest. Like Jewish society, when we had built our society, it was a little shtetl. It wasn't so nice. In came the Romans. They brought modern technology. They built roads. They built bridges. You know, it's like when the Chinese come into China, right? That's why the Chinese going to Africa. You're the Chinese have a policy of going into Africa. So they want to expand their power. But they build dams and bridges, and then they obviously want a lot in return. So the Romans did the same thing. You know, Romans don't just come in. They want to build Roman society. Rabbi Yossi Shatak. Rabbi Yossi remained silent. Na'ana, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai ve'amar. Na'ana, it means two things. Okay, he answered, na'ana, but it also means he raised his voice. Right? In the Torah, right, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from Mount Sinai and he sees the people at the, you know, worshiping the golden calf, he says, Kol anoth anochi shomea. I heard the sounds of screaming, of wild calling out. So na'ana can mean he answered, but it could also mean that he retorted. He responded forcefully. Kol mashe tiknu lo tiknu ela letzarech atzmam. They didn't build it for us. They built it for themselves. Tiknu shvakim lehoshiv behem zonot. Why do they build markets? To put prostitutes in them. Tikmechatzaot la'aden behem atzmam. Why do they build bathhouses? In order to pleasure themselves. Gisharim litol mehem meches. Why do they build roads? In order to tax us. Right, you know, nowadays, by the way, I noticed this when I was driving in from Boston. They've totally done away with, like, paying tolls. I mean, that's not true. You always pay tolls, but you just don't know it anymore, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, when you come in on the airport, so they're on the rent-a-car thing, they say, there's no toll booths in Massachusetts anymore, right? So get an easy pass because you're going to pay no matter what you do. Right? But it used to be, originally, like when we grew, you know, you grew up in New York, what were the tolls for? The bridges, right? Because that's how tolls started. A government wanted to collect. They couldn't charge you for the roads. Everybody had the roads. But they could charge you if they built the bridge. You want to pass the bridge? Pay the toll. So you actually see this in the Gemara, right? So why did they build bridges? Because that's their way of collecting exorbitant taxes on us. Okay, so what happened? The Gemara says, Halach Yehuda ben Gerim b'sipir divrayim. So Yehuda ben Gerim, I don't think he tattled, but he told the story. Okay? V'nishme'u l'malchut. And of course, the walls have ears and people talk, and this discussion came out, and it became heard by the Roman hegemony. Amru Yehuda she'ila yit'aleh. Yehuda, who praised us, yit'aleh. He will become exalted. Yossi she'shatak, Rabbi Yossi, who was quiet. Yigle litzipori. He should be exiled to Tzipori. Tzipori, by the way, ended up being it's in the Galil. It ended up being one of the most important after the destruction of the Talmud of the Beit Hamikdash, one of the most important cities in Jewish settlement, and it became one of the seats of the Yerushalmi Talmud. Right, much of the Yerushalmi was based in Tzipori. Shimon Shegina Yerek. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who berated us, who derided us. He has to be put to death. Okay, now this sounds... So first of all, what I want to stop on and say is, like, why does the Gemara record this conversation? What was the point of this conversation? It's obviously an archetypical conversation. It was a debate that was going on between different sages. It was a political debate that was going on in their time. And the political debate, I think, was a debate that has resonance to this very day. Absolutely to this very day. Rabbi, if we look at, okay, let's leave Rabbi Yossi aside. He was quiet. So we have two positions. We have Rabbi Yehuda, who praised the Romans, and we have Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who derided the Romans. Which position do we more strongly associate? Which we, like, I always used to like to say, when I had the privilege of studying for a year in the Gruz Kola with Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he always would ask a fundamental question. He would ask, of the two positions we have here, which one is obvious and which is interesting? And it's always that always guided me in the way that I always, even today when I study, you see two positions, which one of them is obvious and which one is interesting? So we have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Which is obvious and which is interesting? Like the Romans, hate the Romans. Which is obvious and which is interesting?
Well, we live in very peculiar times because we are Jews and we are Westerners.
Mm.
So the Western part of us likes the Romans.
Right.
In many ways. And the Jewish part is very suspicious and hates the Romans. So there's a conflict within us.
Absolutely correct. Really interesting. Just this past, I would say, this past week, 2 weeks ago, there was a controversy in Israel about the Eurovision. You're all familiar with Eurovision?
Sure.
Right. So it's a really interesting question, the Eurovision. The Eurovision raises so many different interesting questions. First of all, like in America, nobody cares about the Eurovision. It's a very weird contest. It's a bunch of like alt-punk rockers who, you know, if you think about it, it's like...
It's music. It's a music competition.
Yes, but it's not the kind of music that you would go listen to or I would go... Really, it's very, very... what?
On the fringe.
On the fringe. It really is on the fringe. And it always was. Even like the girl who won, Netta, who won last year, she won by clucking like a chicken about...
I'm not your toy.
I'm not your... No, and it was like, right, she won because... I don't know why. Whatever. But in Israel, it's a huge deal. So, interestingly, they became a whole debate about... They were preparing for it on Shabbat, and they had the preparation on Shabbat, and then the whole thing with the Shalva band, that the Shalva band couldn't be in it. I have my own position about why Eurovision did not want the Shalva band to be competing in this thing anyway. So I went, I was at a Shabbaton with Rav Yuval, with Tzohar, and I went, it bothered me because there was a message going around from the chief rabbi of Israel, and they had a whole thing about how, like, it wasn't really nasty. It was okay. It was really okay. But how there's this massive Chilul Shabbat in Israel, and so we have to add Kedusha. We should add, you know, 20 minutes to Shabbat, bring in Shabbat early, keep Shabbat late to sort of compensate in some degree if we can. Which I thought was a very interesting response. I had my own reply to it. So I was at the Shabbaton, and I went to Rabbi Shurlo, Rabbi Yuval Shurlo, who I really, really, he's a very interesting modern thinker. It's worthwhile to follow. He's a very, very important thinker, a very wise person. And I said I was really bothered by the fact that the Haredim had a response, but we didn't have a response. And he said, we debated it. It's a very great debate, how much to respond, because it shows a certain tension in society that Israel is, on the one hand, aware of it, and you know it's really these fringe elements. Really interesting question. And he said to me, really interesting, he said, the problem with Eurovision isn't the Shabbat issue. The real question is, what is the fact that Israel is hosting this fringe, you know, punk rock, you know, you all saw the pictures of the like the guys with the Palestinian flags, you know what I'm saying, right? And you see it, I'm saying, you know, so the thing that should disturb us is not that they flashed a Palestinian flag, look at how they were dressed, look at what kind of music they were promoting, you know, is this the kind of music we want in the Jewish state? So I'll just show you, the week before, in the newspaper that I read called Makor Rishon, there's a rabbi named Rabbi Tzvi Tau. Rabbi Tzvi Tau is the head of the Har Hamor Yeshiva. Har Hamor is a breakaway from Merkaz HaRav Kook. Okay? Merkaz HaRav Kook was Rav Kook's classic yeshiva. Har Hamor broke away because they felt that Rav Kook was too mainstream, and Har Hamor is the flagship of what's called the Chardal community. Chardal means mustard, but it stands for Charedi Dati Leumi. Right? Charedi, religious Zionist. And Rav Tau, you can go online, he wrote an entire booklet, literally this week, about how we have to create a Jewish culture independent of Western culture, because Western culture is creeping into our society and destroying our society. So this was this week, and I couldn't help, like, think about this debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai that happened literally 2,000 years ago. And Rav Tau is writing a booklet, a pamphlet, to his students that he's publishing thousands of copies, sending to his students, that is exactly, literally promoting this exact debate. He's the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai of his time, right? Meaning, let's look at the examples that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai gives. He says, like, you know, look at the hiddenness between them. Yes, they made markets. Markets are fine. What's the matter with markets? L'hoshiv behem zonot. Right, to have the markets invite prostitution. Because you can't just have markets. It doesn't work that way. Right? Why did they you have gisharim litom hem meches? They want money, right? Taxes. Why did they build bathhouses? For pleasure. So if I told the big three, you know, if you look at the seven sins, so if I would include licentiousness, pleasure, and money, okay, what's he complaining about? He's not complaining about the Romans per se. He's complaining about, how, what's wrong with bridges? Bridges are great. It makes it easier for you to get from place A to place B. But it comes with what?
The purpose.
I think what he's saying is it comes with side effects. It brings with it other things that have costs. And those costs are destructive to our society. I would argue Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Huda is a universalist. Yes, it's great. We take the good, we try to filter out the bad, and obviously Rabbi Huda was well aware of the bad also, but we work on it. Whereas Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is an isolationist. He says the cost of the good is not worth it. And this, by the way, is a debate that goes on in every Jewish community around the world.
This debate goes back to the Torah, when they came into the land of Israel. There was always going to be mixing between Jews and non-Jews, and bad influences. And when in Zvulun, when he was going to be a trader, he's going to be trading with non-Jews.
Yes. Yeah, but it's interesting.
It goes way back.
It goes all the way back. It's
exactly.
It's a classic debate. That's exactly the point. That's
between Jewish and non-Jewish influences.
Jewish and non-Jewish.
It goes all the way back.
Right. And so it's interesting to see Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who we extol, you know, on Lag BaOmer, and we celebrate him as this paragon of spirituality, to understand that he believed in isolation. But not only that, Rabbi Shimon, he promoted this idea of isolation. And so why did the Romans consider him a threat? Because what does it mean, isolation? What are the implications of isolation from the Romans?
That's rebellion.
Yeah.
Right? And if you think about it, the rebellion, interestingly, that later came, the Bar Kochva rebellion, was about independence. It was a nationalistic rebellion. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's rebellion was the rebellion of the Maccabim, right? The Hanukkah rebellion. Those are different rebellions. Right? The Hanukkah rebellion is about the ability to practice our religion independent of your paganism, right? The Bar Kochba rebellion is Jewish dominance, Jewish nationality, Jewish independence, which is not necessarily about religion. How do we know it's not about religion? In 1948, it wasn't about religion at all. It was about independence and to protect ourselves and having our own, you know, nationalistic sense. So it's interesting how the Torah can be used either to foment rebellion on a religious basis or on a nationalistic basis. And the Romans recognized this and saw it as a threat. So the reason ultimately that the Romans, wanted to, became anti-Jewish, as it were, was because the Judaism represented a threat to the Roman presence in the empire. Okay, so that leads to, we're not going to keep it too long, so that leads us to the second half of the story. Second half of the story is that led Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai to the cave. Okay, we'll just read the part about the cave. The second paragraph, in the fourth line in the Hebrew, in the second paragraph, Azlu Tashlu B'Ma'arata, so they had to run away, right? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai had to flee for his life because the Romans wanted to kill him. Okay? Itrachish Nisa, a miracle happened. Ivru Le Lehu, he went with his son. They were created for him Charuva, a carob tree, Ve'ena Demaya, right? And a spring of water. V'havu Meshalchu Minayhu, V'havu Yatve Adzav Arayhu Bechala. So, what did Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his son, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon, do all day in a cave? They learned, they studied. Okay? So how did they do this? They took off their clothes. They dug themselves up in dirt, up to their necks. Okay? And they would study all day. And then, when Kula Yom Agarse, all day they would study. Be'idan Siluye, when the time came to Davin, which is interesting, Lavshu Michsu, they put on their clothes, Umatzlu, and then they would pray. V'hada Mishalchi Manayu, and then they took off their clothes again. Kihechi delo livlu, because if they wore their clothes all the time, they would wither. They only had one. They had one pair of clothes. Okay, so this story, they were in the cave for 12 years. This story is a fascinating, story, a fascinating legend. What do we do with that? What do you even do with it? With this idea, did it factually happen? Right, Dr. Kamaiti says no. I don't want to get into it. It's not my decision. It historically happened. It happened in the Jewish religion. We believe that it happened. It's part of our faith tradition that it happened. It's part of our legend. Okay? What is it trying to convey to us? Like, he went into a cave. So you would think when a person would go into hiding, so he would go into hiding. You know what I'm saying? And then he would try to get out as soon as he can. Does it sound like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is looking to get out? Ah, you know?
Planning for the long term.
Planning for the long haul, right. You know, like he's not, whatever. And let's think about this imagery. So first of all, the miracle happened. A miracle happened, providing them with sustenance. What kind of sustenance? Caribs and water, right? I don't know about any nutritionists are here, but...
Not very nutritious.
Okay? Minimal, absolute minimal subsistence. And what about the imagery of them studying all day, buried to their necks in dirt? What imagery does that... So they're, in essence, they're burying themselves, right? Almost to the point where they're dead. So let's leave that, keep that imagery to ourselves. And they do this happily for 12 years. Right. This is the idea, but this is part of the legend of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Right. The reason we think of this as we don't look down on this. We think of this as exalted. Yes, sir.
I've heard the imagery described, particularly focusing on them taking all their clothes off and having everything provided for them by, you know, trees and water, and sort of recreating a Garden of Eden kind of setting.
Okay, does that sound like the Garden of Eden to you? Is that the kind of... When we imagine, like, Mashiach will come, we get to Mashiach and they say, okay, everybody, take off your clothes, get in the dirt.
It does in the sense of of having everything provided for you by God.
Everything provided, yes. Absolutely, I agree. And that leads us to our next source, okay? Yes.
How is this rebellion, though? I mean, they're disappearing. They're not bothering the Romans. They're not actually rebelling.
I think what happened was he tried to foment a repelling of against the Romans.
Uh-huh.
Meaning he tried to promote his attitude. The Romans are bad. This Roman thing is not good for us. Right. I think most people were like those terrorists in the Monty Python skit. Well, they're the roads and the medicine. The life is great. You know what I'm saying? Life was much, 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 much better. Uh-huh. Like the economy was doing better. Even think to ourselves, like think about like all the ruins. Think about the Romans. It's so interesting. You go to Israel today, go to Caesarea.
I was just about to mention
it. Yeah. I mean, they built amazing things.
The aqueducts.
Yeah, the aqueducts. The aqueducts.
Transported water.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, they made life much easier. They built up the economy. But on the other hand, you go to Caesarea, other than the aqueducts, what do they have?
A lot of pagan idols.
Also, first of all, the Romans built this incredible port. And, you know, you have to, if you haven't spent time in Caesarea, it's really just, it's beautiful and it's worthwhile. The big thing is the Colosseum and the Hippodrome. So on Chol HaMoed, if you go, like the Parks Authority, they have reenactments of the horse races. You could go and you can watch them like running around, that's called a Hippodrome, right? It's like, that's what it's called. You know, but so to be honest with you, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai would say, yeah, they built that big port. But what you think Jews should go to movies? They're supposed to go to see plays? And what do you think they were doing at the Hippodrome? You know, OTB, they're betting, of course. That's what people do in horse races, right? Like, is that a Jewish pastime that we want to have? So you see, literally before your eyes, the beauty and the splendor on the one hand, and the moral degradation, exactly in the same place.
I want to react to Renana's statement because it's very interesting in terms of rebellion.
Yeah.
Because we think of rebellion as armed rebellion or telling someone else to rebel, being a leader in rebellion. But sitting and learning is a rebellion. And that's the argument that takes place about the Shoah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly the argument that takes place at Shoah, where the people who took up arms and resisted the only ones who resisted? Or were the people who survived and kept mitzvot and kept whatever they could, did they also, well, that was also a form of rebellion, even though they may have lost.
Yeah.
So this idea is very interesting.
No, well, Leon's saying one thing is interesting. You could say he didn't recant. I mean, he could have recanted, and he did not.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But I just thought going and hiding like this in a cave.
Right.
is not showing what you're doing. Let's let him learn.
But he continued to do what he felt he should be doing every day, which was learning. Yeah.
All right, I want to go on to the next. So this brings us to another very, very famous dispute between Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and another sage, Rabbi Yishmael, from Gemara and Brachot, the second page. Okay? There's a very famous debate about what should a person do with his time and how should a person be occupied during his lifetime. Okay, so the Gemara says the following. Rabbi Chanina bar Papa raised the following debate. K'tiv ulekachti digani b'ito. It says, God said, I will take my grain at its time. Uktiv, but it also says in another verse, va'asafta diganecha, and you will take your grain. I mean, who takes the grain? Who does the harvesting? God or us? So the Gemara says, lo kasha, no problem. Kan bizman shiyisrael osim ritzono shel makom. One refers to when the Jewish people are following God's will. Kan bizman she'en yisrael osim ritzono shel makom. And one refers to when the Jews are not doing God's will. Meaning, if you follow God's will, then God will provide. But if you don't follow God's will, then you're going to have to do the work. And the Gemara says this alludes to a very famous debate between Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Yishmael. Tanu Rabbanan, va'asavta diganecha. Okay, it says you shall gather your grain. Ma Talmud lomar. What does that mean? Of course you should gather your grain. Why does God have to tell you to gather your grain? Lefi shene'emar, lo yamush sefer ha-Torah hazeh mipicha. The verse says, right, this sefer Torah should never leave your lips. Meaning a person should study. I remember, by the way, it had a lot of influence on you. When you go to yeshiva, and you know, as I grew up, they instill in you this idea of constantly, a Jew has to be constantly learning and constantly learning. I think to the point where like there's a sense of guilt if you don't, if you're not always learning, you're wasting every moment. The idea of the preciousness of every moment. Okay? Meaning you have to study all the time. A Jew should always be occupied in Torah study. So, yachol devarim kichtavam, one might think you could take this literally. Talmud lomar ve'asavta diganecha. So therefore, the verse says, you shall gather your grain. This is the very famous line. Hanheg bahem minhag derech eretz. Hanheg bahem, you should associate with them, with the words of Torah, minhag derech eretz. Meaning, I don't know how you translate that. Assume in their regard the way of the world. Meaning, yes, of course you have to study, but you also have to make a living. Okay? It's not exclusive. Find balance. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, he's our famous Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai omer, Efshar adam choresh b'shat charisha. What's going to happen? Okay, he's got a plow. V'zorea b'shat tzriya, and then he has to sow the seeds. V'kotzer b'shat tzira, and then he has to harvest. V'dash b'shat tisha, and then he has to thresh the grain. V'zorea b'shat teruach, and then he's got a winnow. Winnow, that's right, okay. Torah matehe aleha. What's going to happen to Torah? Because there's never enough time in the day to make a living. El abizman shiyisrael otzim etzono shel makom, melachtam na'aseit al yedei achirin. Rather, if Jews follow God's will, then their work is done by others. Shne'emar ve'amdu zarim u'ru tzonchem. Okay, the strangers will come up, will rise up, and they will shepherd your sheep. Ubizman she'en Yisrael osim etzono shel makom, melachtim na'aseit al yedei atzman. If they don't do God's will, then their work is done on by themselves. Meaning, instead, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, what should you do?
Sit and learn.
Sit and learn. Right, that's what we associate. By the way, it's not just sitting and learning, but do spiritual things. Engage in spirituality, study, intellectualism, learning, Torah. Sit and learn. It's like that famous thing, you know, that famous joke. A guy met his future son-in-law, right, and okay.
God will provide. I taught this Gemara yesterday.
Yes.
And I even made this.
Really? So I feel like we just have to give the number, right? Joke number four. Mm-hmm. He thinks I'm God. Okay, right. That's it. Okay.
We know it.
Okay. So God will provide. Okay. But we joke about it. But what we just learned, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, he wasn't just talk. He did it. Right? What in our legend, what happened? He said, I'm going to learn. And so what happened? Itrachish lehu nisa, a miracle occurred. And God did provide. Here's the trick about God providing. God doesn't always provide the way you think God should provide. Meaning, God's not going to, Matt, you're not going to win the lottery and live in the lap of luxury in order for God to provide. Rather, what's God going to provide? A carob tree and a spring of water. Right? You really want to live by God alone? Then you better be committed to it. But there's more to it. So we're going to finish with a statement, with a commentary of Rav Kook. If you turn to the last page. This is the commentary of Ein Ayah. Ein Ayah is the commentary of Rav Kook. It's Ein Ayah is a play on words of Ein Yaakov. Ein Yaakov is a very famous commentary, one of the original commentaries on all of the Agadah of the Talmud. Right? Rabbi Yaakov Ibn Habib in the 16th century, he basically took all the passages of the Talmud that were Agadic and copied them down, and he wrote his own commentary on it. And he introduced the idea of only studying Agadah. Because when you study the Gemara, it's a combination of halakha and Agadah. And he turned it into, he said, let's just focus on that. And Agadah, by the way, all of Agadah is the basis for all of Jewish thought that we have today. Like we said, all of the great debates are ancient debates. So if you want to look at books of Jewish thought, all of it is based in Agadah. So Rav Kook wrote a commentary called Ein Ayah, Ayah Avram Yitzchak HaKohen. And his commentary is probably, if you want to study Rav Kook, right, much of his writings, all of the Orot writings and everything like that, are esoteric poetry. Really, really hard to understand. I mean, just very hard. But the most understandable and the easiest way of accessing the thought of Rav Kook is through Ein Ayah. Because he's very clear. And he's unusually unpoetic and clear. So he says, he wants to know, what's the debate? What's the nature of the debate between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? So I'm after the end of the bold. You see where it says Ha'im, like 8 lines in where it says Ha'im. Okay, he says, Rabbi Kook says the following: Ha'im tchunat ha'adam mitzad atzmo ru'uyahi liyot osek tamid rak b'muskalut b'lo hefsek. Is the attribute of man, meaning the ideal attribute of man, to be engaged only in muskalut, in intellectual pursuits? We think about it, interestingly, as Torah. Rav Kook didn't say that. Meaning, is his ideal the pursuit of the intellectual? V'hashimush b'inyanim ma'asiyim hema lo rak lehechrech. And all these other physical pursuits that you engage in are only out of necessity. V'hem l'mata mima'alato hativit, and they are lower than his exalted nature. Meaning, is man essentially in his nature an intellectual, spiritual being? All right, and then the physical, okay, you got to eat. But what can you do? That's only out of necessity. O shemit o, or the other side, shemitzat chunat ha'adam, inherent in the essence of man, murkav minitiyot ma'asiyot vi'iyuniyot. A person has inclinations that are intellectual, but also physical. V'ha'esek b'ma'asim chomrim, and engaging in physical activity, im heim l'fi amida, if they are in proportion, meaning, obviously, if all you do is physical, that's not good, but if they are proportional, heim lo rak mitzad hechrech, they're not just out of necessity, ki im mashlimim gamken et chunato al pi tivo. They complete a person in his nature. Okay, so the debate is the following. Do I say, man is a spiritual being. God created us to be spiritual. And the reason I engage in physical is that the physical drags me down. So God created us in order to overcome our physical. So therefore, you should try to minimize as much as possible. That's one perspective. On the other hand, one could say, no. God created us as a combination of the spirit and the body. And therefore, when God did that, he did that in his wisdom because he wanted our completion to be both in spirit and in body. And we inherently, the way he created us with a need to have physical accomplishments as well. To do physical things in the world. To be physically creative. To have physical enjoyments. And those things are, by definition, part of human completion. It's a philosophical question. Hu davar, so this question, ra'ui lihistapek, it's a question. Ubazel cholkim Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. This is the debate between Rabbi Yishmael. Did Rabbi Yishmael svira lei? Rabbi Yishmael held Just engaging in spirituality or iyun or intellectualism is not a human trait. Therefore, interrupting that with worldly pursuits, we don't think of that as negative. Right? If a person says, you ask yourself, if you built your ideal yeshiva, in your ideal yeshiva, would it just be literally morning to night study? No, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.? Or would you build in an hour or 2 hours of physical activity?
No, the latter.
You would do the latter.
The latter.
Well, would you do the latter because you think the guys just can't handle it? Or because you believe physical activity and being strong is part and parcel of what it means to be a human being?
Take care of your mind and your body.
Correct. Correct. How many, now, the really irony, interestingly, how many yeshivot do the former and how many do the latter? 100% and 0%. Okay? And you think, you know, yeshivot that build in, not a break to take a nap, but say, in the day, we're going to do physical activity. You know what I'm saying?
Right? Basketball courts.
For if you want to go to the basketball. Have you ever heard of a yeshiva that says, I expect you to be in study from 9 to 1, and just like you're expected to be in study from 9 to 1, you are expected to be at physical activity from 1 to 2, between you and me.
I know a yeshiva.
What?
I know one.
You know one?
Yes.
Right. What, if you had a yeshiva like
son,
that.
My grandson, specifically, the Rebbe said, you cannot study at this time. We want you outside.
Okay, very interesting.
To work.
Right. I think.
And the children, he works with weights now, but so is his classmates.
Uh-huh.
They're extremely strong. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
How strong they are.
I would argue that they learn better too.
Of course they do.
Yeah. Yeah. But so that an interesting question. If you'd ask that Rosh Hashiva, is he doing it because he believes that it helps their learning or because he believes that the physical is an important element of human completion as well?
I think they do.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It's a really interesting question. He says that's the debate between Rabbi Shimon.
I think it's both.
What?
I think it's both.
So now the Gemara says, the conclusion of the Gemara is, so, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, just with the example, he lived in the cave. He believed that the ascetic life, A-S-C, ascetic life, uh-huh, is the ideal life because the idea is to strip away all the physicality and just to be intellectual. Live in dirt, up to my neck, almost bury myself, almost as if I'm not alive as long as I can, you know, plug into my intellectual computer and talk Torah with my son.
But that wasn't his choice.
What, to sit in dirt?
He was forced by the circumstances to run away. If he had not been forced to run away for his life,
yeah,
he might not have done this.
I believe what he would
still
have done.
Doing it before that.
Yeah, I believe what he would have done.
Because of the heightened risk, he had to hide in addition to just us.
I always think of him as sort of like they say about the Chazon Ish. Before he couldn't hide it anymore. The way the Chazon Ish became the Chazon Ish is he sat in a room in Bnei Brak and learned for 40 years. Right? Because that's what he believed brought holiness to the world, and that is one side of the debate, and so this isolationism versus physicality, it's a time and immemorial debate. It's about the nature of man. It's a fascinating debate that goes on, as I mentioned, that continues to this very day. And like Rav Kook says, the Gemara says harbe. The Gemara doesn't actually issue a verdict. Doesn't say right or wrong. All the Gemara says is harbe asu k'Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Many attempted to live like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. V'lo al tabi adam. They were not successful. And many tried to follow the advice of Rabbi Ishmael, v'al tabi adam. And they were successful. It doesn't make a decision, interestingly, about which one is right. Because I don't think you can. I think there are unique people, there are very special, unique people, who should live that kind of life, because that's their element, but they're a tiny, tiny minority. And they're willing to make the sacrifices to live on the carob and the water, because it's a life of poverty, it's a life of suffering, in order to live that spirituality. Whereas on the other hand, most of us, I couldn't do it. But if you can't do it, then you better be able to find that balance, trying to live the physical and the spiritual together in order to see that connection and elevate the physical and spiritual together.
Make me think of a description I had actually heard of Yaakov, who was described as basically just studying Torah, if you will, all day long until he was forced
Correct. To leave, meaning he was in the
and grow into something.
Right, in the Academy of Shem and Aver. I think that's what you're referring to, the Academy of Shem and Aver.
Our Abba until he started earning a living and doing physical stuff.
Right. I mean, we see today, it's interesting, the modern state of Israel is the greatest source, people don't understand this, the greatest source and supporter of Torah study, but you can only do that if you have a strong state, if you have a state that's economically powerful. You know, no, even the negotiations now, like it's taken for granted that the Haredi parties are in the will be in the government, if there will be a government, and that the government will give hundreds and hundreds of millions of shkalim to support their yeshiva. And everybody's happy. Well, I don't know if everybody's happy.
Yeah.
Some people are happy. But just understand, by the way, it's not just Haredi yeshivot, the modern Orthodox yeshivot as well. Many yeshivot, right? But understand that in order to do that, you have to have gas fields, and you have to have high tech, and you have to have exits, and everything that comes along with that.
The first reference you made, your first reference, was that Hashem provides the character. The second reference is that other nations provide.
That's a matter of
in this one.
Absolutely.
In Israel, it's the Jews that provide the.
Absolutely, that's it.
That kind of
there is definitely more deeper digging to do, and to that I encourage you to turn to Rabbi Brander, who can talk about the other nations versus the nations. All right, I want to thank you all for listening. I wish you a good, happy holiday.
Thank you.
Okay.
On the bench now.
Okay.